The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, good morning. How are you?
Boker Tov, world record for an Israeli farmer. Tzachi Ariel is an Israeli strawberry farmer, and he has broken the world record for the largest strawberry ever. And his strawberry weighed in at 289 grams, which apparently broke the previous world record, which was a Japanese record, by 39 grams. Now, there was lots of speculation as to how come the strawberry managed to get to this size. It's of the Ilan variety, which apparently is quite well known for producing a relatively large fruit. Some speculation that the strawberry might have been as a result of a number of different strawberries growing very close together and then ultimately fusing into one large one. We understand that the actual strawberry was not even grown this year, that it was grown sometime a year ago and held in freezer conditions to be verified by the Guinness World Records team. So it's not even really edible anymore. But nonetheless, it goes Amazing. Down in the Guinness World Records against our farmer Tzachi Ariel, who apparently is the world record holder for the largest strawberry.
Incredible. Absolutely mad. I don't know what one does with the world's largest strawberry, but I suppose what one does is record it for the Guinness World Book of Records.
And for posterity, I guess,
yeah,
right?
Exactly. Always known for your size of your strawberry. All right, Anthony, let's talk about what is going on with Russia and Ukraine, because it's not getting pretty.
No, it wasn't pretty to begin with, and it's kind of getting less pretty as time goes on. So people who've been following the news on the eastern border of Ukraine will have seen that there was something of an uprising in those eastern regions of Ukraine, which have been always supporters of Russia, to be honest. The people who live there in that eastern region have always had a very strong affiliation with Russia. And it seems as if, though, on this particular occasion, President Putin has managed to somehow fire them up and get them some sort of hardware required, the necessary military support, and of course the incentive to rise up against the Ukraine and declare independence. And I use that word in inverted commas because it's not really independent, it's really part of Russia. And of course the first thing that President Putin did was he executed a decree in support of the so-called independent regions of eastern Ukraine, which is really mostly around the Donetsk area. There was apparently quite a lot of activity with people being evacuated from the area, some military activity, and we understand this morning that the Russians may well even have sent troops into that area of Donetsk and some of the other towns on the eastern border. It's kind of a little bit like what went down in the Crimean Peninsula, which also had a very, very strong Russian population, Russian supporting population. And it came as a little surprise when President Putin effectively took over the Crimea and received quite a lot of support from locals. But of course, it does destabilize the region. The United Nations Security Council met yesterday to condemn the actions, although there doesn't seem to have been any further action on the ground. This is the first real test of NATO. And for Israelis, this means that the Foreign Minister Yair Lapid has decided to move the embassy and the consular services from the capital, Kiev, and he has moved those to a city in the west of the Ukraine, which is further away from the Russian border and therefore considered to be a little safer in the overall scheme of things. And so the Israeli embassy already started setting up consular services in the city of Lviv, I think that's how you pronounce it, already last week. The announcement came yesterday that the embassy had actually moved its entire operations to Lviv until now. So those services all been transferred over. Israelis requiring consular services, including potentially people who want to be evacuated from the Ukraine. That was something that was made available to Israelis already at the start of the main conflict. Very few people apparently took up on the offer, but now those services are in Lviv, and obviously Israel is doing its very, very best to stay impartial in this particular conflict. Israel has interest to maintain good cordial relations with Russia for a number of good reasons, not least of which because Russia, of course, is still situated Russian troops on the border that we held with Syria, Russian troops still there, Russian troops evident in our region. Of course, lots of strategic relations that Israel enjoys with Russia, including, you know, millions of people who made Aliyah from the former Soviet Union and still require some sort of relationship with Russia, family members still left in Russia. All of that's important. Of course, the Iranian access and the support that Russia has given to Iran, also very important in all of this constellation. The import and export of goods and services, all very important with Russia, and no less with Ukraine, because as much as we've had a lot of immigrants from the former Soviet Union, from Russia in particular, there are also a good number of immigrants who've come from Ukraine and also hold family relations with people still living in Ukraine. Mm. We also spoke a little bit about Israel's trading relations with Ukraine, the import of wheat and grain, and of course eggs are vital, important at this time of year, especially for Israelis. So there is good reason why Israel wishes to maintain an impartiality in this particular conflict. But I think it's going to be very, very difficult to remain absolutely impartial throughout. I think that especially when actions are taken by Russia of this type, which are considered to be quite aggressive and potentially destabilizing, I think it's very, very difficult for Israel to stand back and say, we are not going to be critical of Russia and Russia's actions and Russia's role in creating this instability in the region. So we're all watching from something of a distance. Many people living in Israel have a very personal interest with family members in that region and obviously very concerned about their safety. But at the moment, the consulate and the embassy continues to operate from Lviv. And we will continue, of course, to watch how things progress today. Let's see what response might come from NATO in light of that aggression on the part of the Russians yesterday.
Yep, certainly something we'll be speaking a lot more about. This is another interesting story. Four new judges were appointed to Israel's Supreme Court yesterday. Tell us about the new judges.
So the Judicial Selection Committee appointed four new judges to the Supreme Court. This effectively shuffles around the 15 judges who sit on the bench of the Israeli Supreme Court. And as always with these types of appointments, people want to know how the shape of the individuals might affect the overall composition of the bench of judges that sit on the High Court, on the bench of the Supreme Court. And it's interesting to see how each of these individuals, these four judges have been appointed, have kind of sort of been handpicked, not only for their judicial capabilities, for their legal capabilities, but indeed it's a lot about who they are and where they come from and what context they might provide in terms of their ethnicity, in terms of their background, in terms of their political leanings. All of this becomes very, very important in the overall mix. Now, there is a seat on the Supreme Court that's notionally reserved for an Arab Israeli. This seat has now been appointed to Judge Khaled Kaboub. He is the first Muslim Arab to be appointed as a judge to the Supreme Court. Up until now, we have had a number of Arab Israelis sitting on the Supreme Court bench, but they have all been Christian Arabs. This is the first time that we actually have a Muslim Arab. And so this is one of the factors being touted around. Now, you know, should we shout this from the rooftops? Is this really, really important? I think sometimes it is. And sometimes it's best just to say he is a Supreme Court judge. And oh, by the way, as a kind of a side comment, he happens to be a Muslim Arab. But why do we need to advertise that? Why is that such a big deal? He is just an Arab Israeli with very, very strong legal capabilities. He's a judge in his own right up until now, albeit not on the Supreme Court. And he has warranted the appointment to the Supreme Court. Congratulations to him. At the same time, we also have apparently the first female judge who comes from Sephardi descent. Now, is that really important? Mm. Well, it has unfortunately been made important because certain accusations were leveled in the past week towards the president of the High Court, Esther Hayut, who one of the sitting MPs claims that he has made really disparaging remarks to her to try to indicate that somehow she in particular, but also the High Court in general, has a certain negative disposition towards people who come from Middle Eastern descent. I don't know if Sephardi descent is the right word, but certainly Middle Eastern descent. So here we have now a female from Sephardi descent, who also happens to be the wife of a Likud member of Knesset, in the form of a Judge Gila Kanfei Steinitz, of course, the wife of Yuval Steinitz. And so she is now being appointed to the High Court. I think it's great that two women were appointed to the High Court, not only Judge Gila Kanfei Steinitz, but also another lady who was appointed, actually this one, by the president of the High Court, and she is Ruth Ronen. Also, all of these people have been judges in the Israeli system. She was the main pick of the Supreme Court President Esther Hayut, and she is considered to be a moderate activist. So everybody has to be labeled in terms of their political leanings as well. For me, what's more interesting, besides the Muslim Arab and the two ladies, one of Sephardi descent, is the fact that a judge has been appointed to the High Court who is not a judge. He is a private sector lawyer, and this is Yechiel Kasher. And so he has warranted the right to sit on the Israeli Supreme Court, even though he's not even a judge in the system right now, which I think is an interesting appointment. Of course, everybody is dissecting the so-called political leanings and what this means in terms of the makeup of the Supreme Court. But it's good that we finally have some movement, some appointments being made to the Supreme Court after there was this hiatus for so long, while, you know, the Israeli government wasn't really working very well. So at least we have these appointments being made, and we will see how things progress from here.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing. Also, equally so, is President Herzog will visit Greece and Cyprus ahead of his trip to Turkey.
So, yeah, I mean, this is, of course, something that was announced after the announcement of his trip to Turkey. And it's a very strategic move on the part of the president, that he will visit Greece and Cyprus before he goes to Turkey. And I think it's absolutely right that this is the way that things happen, because, of course, we have a very close relationship. Israel has a very close relationship with both Greece and Cyprus, working with them on many issues, including general security and safety and stability in the Eastern Mediterranean, also working together with them on the gas extraction projects. Cyprus also working in the Mediterranean to extract natural gas from gas fields that are within its territorial waters, and of course working together with Greece and Cyprus to potentially try to build a gas pipeline, which would rival that gas pipeline that, of course, brings Russian gas to Europe across the Ukraine right now, and which may be one of the factors that influence the current conflict that we're seeing in Russia with the Ukraine. But President Herzog has decided he will visit Greece. He will leave on Thursday for a state visit. And while he is in Greece, he will be the guest of the president, Katerina Sakellaropoulou. I don't know how we can pronounce her name, but I've done my best there. and of course, next week on Wednesday, he will also visit Cyprus. He will be the guest of the Cypriot president, Nikos Anastasiadis. Anastasiadis. These names are very difficult for me, I have to say. But the good news is that he will also visit members of the Jewish community while he's there. He will meet other senior officials. He will also lay a wreath at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier when he is in Greece. And he will, I'm sure, be very, very warmly welcomed in Greece. And I think the message will be that even though there continues to be a conflict between Greece, Cyprus, and Turkey, Israel has close relations with Greece and Cyprus. We are sending that message loud and clear. But we're also seeking somehow to have a relationship with Turkey. And potentially Israel could be a catalyst towards bringing a little bit more together between the Greek community, Greece and Cyprus, and Turkey. Of course, we still have that wall that runs through Nicosia in Cyprus, and is a great cause of conflict between Turkey and the Greek community in Cyprus and, of course, in Greece. So good news, and I think that President Herzog really bringing his diplomatic skills to the fore here by making these state visits and hopefully creating a little bit more closeness with those countries for Israel.
Absolutely. Anthony Reich, thank you as always.